Les séminaires du Collège de France.
Bon, bah, rebonjour. On a le plaisir d'accueillir Francis Nier, qui est venu de Paris 13 et qui va parler de technique semi-classique en dimension infinie. Et donc, on peut poser des questions. C'est mieux d'utiliser le micro si on.
All right. Je vais parler anglais. On a eu une discussion là-dessus, mais il y a certaines personnes dans l'audience qui ne parlent pas très bien français, donc je vais parler en anglais avec mon anglais qui n'est pas terrible, mais sauf si vous voulez que je parle français. All right. This talk actually results. From discussion that I had 1 year ago with Steve Zeldich, and actually at that time we had planned a visit here in Paris, so we invited him, and unfortunately it could not happen. And it could have been a great time because many of us remember how talented a lecturer he was. So, and okay, so I will talk about essentially the discussion that we had, and it was motivated by his study of eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. And he started to ask me a question about semi-classical method in infinite dimension, and I will explain how it comes. So when I speak of infinite dimension, this means that the phase space itself is infinite dimensional. This question has a very long history, actually. It is at the crossroad of quantum field theory, probability, and microlocal analysis. And it has received, until very recently, some new lights, and we understand more and better and better what is going on. So I will not cover all the topics. It has a wide variety of problems and approaches, but what I will give you, what I wish to share with you, is my essentially my picture of this general landscape, and I will give you some elements of it. So I will give some examples of problems. Explain the relationship between quantization and the probabilistic point of view. And then I will, the last part will be about the Egorov theorem, because that was the first question in a mail by Steve, so that was in January, last January. He asked me, is there an Egorov theorem in infinite dimension? And the answer is neither definitely no, nor definitely yes. And this is what I will explain. So let's start with something which is completely classical. It is that actually the bosonic mean field asymptotics is a semi-classical asymptotics, and this is really well known formally, and this is what I will explain. But it happens that there are also many other problems which are not exactly like in finite dimension, actually, which are not exactly semi-classical, but that we can try to start to analyze with semi-classical tools. So let's start with the bosonic mean field problem. I start with, let's say, a Schrödinger equation, n-body problem, and the mean field regime, it is when one particle experiences the interaction with n particles, but the total interaction is of order 1. So it is scaled with 1 over n. I consider bosons. This means that the wave function is symmetric in all the variables. And the first thing that we do is that we divide the evolution equation by 1 over n. And you call 1 over n. Okay, you set 1 over n, so n is a large parameter, is epsilon. And when you work in the bosonic Fock space, you can put the n particle sector in the full bosonic Fock space, and your equation here becomes I epsilon dt psi. This is epsilon d gamma of Mises Laplace. This is exactly the d gamma of Laplace. It is the second quantized version of the one particle operator, which is the Laplacian. And then you have epsilon square times 1/2, and this is it is quadratic. It is quartic in the annihilation and creation operators. And actually, what is this operator? It is a Vick quantization parameterized by epsilon of the energy E, where the energy is exactly this energy, okay, where you have the free energy, which is quadratic, and plus quartic energy. And it is an energy which is defined on some functional space, which is infinite dimensional. I recall the Vick epsilon, so it is parameterized by epsilon. So how do we do for the epsilon quantization? We replace Z of X by the annihilation operator, which is scaled with an epsilon, actually square root of epsilon. And you replace Z bar by the creation operator. And Vick means that an annihilation operator is always on the right-hand side and the creation operator on the left-hand side. So this is it specifies the order. Epsilon means that when you compute the commutator, you get an epsilon, so it is essentially a delta, and you have an epsilon, so when epsilon goes to zero, or when n goes to infinity, essentially the two operators commute asymptotically. So this is why it first looks like something which is asymptotically commutative, but maybe it's not so clear for you that it is a semi-classical regime, and it is what I will explain now. Actually, you can start, instead of having a phase space which is a functional phase space, you can start with Z, which belongs to C to the power D, or even to C. And then you know that you have creation and annihilation operators associated to the harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian, which is a basic model for boson, actually, and the energy of the harmonic oscillator counts the number of of boson. So you take so the Hilbert space is CD, it's like R2D, so Z is X plus Ix psi. And I say that I replace, so this is A epsilon of G, so it is antilinear, and it corresponds to Z. And there is a trick, because here we have square root of epsilon divided by square root of 2, you replace epsilon is 2H, and now you get that you will have square root of H dx plus x, square root of h minus dx plus x, and this is unitary equivalent. This is a change of scale that actually Nalini wrote it. This is unitary equivalent to this, and you see this is exactly a semi-classical quantization. So in finite dimension, you can compare all the quantizations. So you can compare the classical quantization with the Weyl quantization, but you can also compare the Wieck quantization with the with any quantization. Actually, they differ by an error which is of order h, if you are in the good class of symbols. And this is the same if you make this change with the square root of h, this is exactly the same. So if you want to study the eigenvalue problem, which is you take a Wieck quantized operator minus energy equal to zero or equal to a small number, then you start by studying the characteristic set. And you can use a complex coordinate in the phase space. And if you want to study the dynamics, this is what Nalini explained just before, that you have, if you want to so this is the Egorov theorem, if you want to study the propagation, actually this is related to the solution of the Hamilton equation in the phase space. And with the complex coordinates, they can be written I z dot, which is dz bar e. And what is the symplectic form when you have an Hermitian scalar product on a complex space? The real part is a real scalar product, and the imaginary part is a symplectic form. So the symplectic form is actually given by the imaginary part of the scalar product. So this is in infinite dimension. We recover exactly, so it is in a linear space, it is not on a manifold, this is another question. We really recover the semi-classical asymptotics. So I mentioned the R3 model for the mean field in example one. There is another example that I want to present. It was actually studied rather recently by Amour Nouriga, so Jean Nouriga is here, and Lisette Jager. And it is a toy model coming from a toy model for electrodynamics, which is called the spin boson model. Actually, it is with the full electromagnetic field here. And you have a Hilbert space, which is actually, you can consider the real part and the imaginary part. It's better to start with real Hilbert space for this this problem. The full space is the bosonic Fock space on this one particle space, so this is for the electromagnetic field, and then you have a collection of spins, and you want to study the dynamics of spins coupled to the electromagnetic field. So the free field, this is simply the it is given by the dispersion relation for photons, and then you have a magnetic field, the quantized magnetic field, which is written with some ultraviolet cutoff, and you have the electric field, and then you can, with the magnetic field, of course, you have an interaction with the spins, and you can consider the full Hamiltonian, which is a free Hamiltonian, plus the interaction terms, which couples the quantized magnetic field with the spins. And once you have done this, you can study the evolution for the full Hamiltonian with of an observable, and you do it for the magnetic field, the electric field, and the spin. And what they prove is that they got a full asymptotic expansion in terms of epsilon of these three operators, with a principal part, so the main term, it is given by B0, E0, and an S0 of T, where B0, E0 solve the vacuum Maxwell equations, and the spin solve the Bloch equation, which is a differential equation where the magnetic field plays a role. So that's what they obtained, but so this is not new because it is known as the Maxwell block system. Actually, they were able to compute all the correcting terms, so the full asymptotic expansion in terms of epsilon. Let me say a different comparison between example 1 and example 3. In example 1, we had a translation invariant multiplication operator, and even if you put some ultraviolet cutoff, because of the translation invariant, it is not a compact operator. While in the third example, with the spin boson problem, actually there is a neutral violet cutoff, and also it is the interaction term, it decays actually strongly with respect to X, and this leads to trace class or Hilbert-Schmidt interaction operators at the Vick symbol level. So these two differences are the most important. So it is also quadratic, but it is not the most important thing, actually. The consequence, as you will see, is that in example 3, one can propagate the observables with some kind of Egorov theorem. And in example 1, it is not possible in any reasonable pseudo-differential class. And this is what I will explain in the end. Now I will speak of problems which are not exactly semi-classical problem. So one problem, it is the evolution of a particle in some potential which is a Gaussian field with some code variance which is okay, which can be computed. So it is the potential is some centered Gaussian variable, and it is known that Gaussian fields are of course connected with the bosonic Fock space. This is, as I said, this is a very standard thing. So you can translate the problem because there is some invariance with respect to translation. You can translate the problem in some order. So this is due to the fact that you remove Xi is a Fourier variable of the full translation where you translate the particle and the medium. The random potential becomes a field operator, it acts on this coupling space. So this is for the random potential, and this is for the particle or for in the Fourier variable. And what is this phi? So this is the square root of the epsilon A plus square root of epsilon A star of V. So this is a semi-classical operator. There is also an epsilon here in front of the partial derivative. But d gamma of dy, this is a quadratic operator in the fields. So this is a quartic operator, and it is not semi-classical because there is no epsilon in front of here. So this is not exactly a semi-classical operator, and mean field or semi-classical method makes sense only for the times of order epsilon 1/2, which is not enough for especially the kinetic limit. It is when the time is of order 1, and the diffusive limit, it is for even larger time. So, and there are results for this kind of model. So. But this is something that we have reconsidered with this approach, recently with Sébastien Breteau. Okay, another example which is not exactly semi-classical, it is also a very basic example, it is a case of a Gibbs state, where you know the one particle Hamiltonian, and you can put a semi-classical parameter in it. So for the one particle Hamiltonian, I took the harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian, I second quantize it, this is here, I take the Gibbs state with it, so and I normalize with the trace. So this is a state and a thermal state. And in the midfield limit, as epsilon goes to zero and H is fixed, it is known that you have to choose a chemical potential with a good scaling. It is known that all the reduced density matrices, which describe the evolution of, so if you take the one reduced density matrix, it describes the evolution of a typical one particle state, or not the evolution, the behavior of a typical one particle state, and you can take two particle states and so on. So when you take the limit as epsilon goes to zero, so everything can be computed explicitly, so you get this formula, and it is known as an effect of the Bose-Einstein condensation. And this convergence means that when you take any v-quantized observable with respect to, and you take the trace with this state, it converges to the v-quantized I take a monomial like this, so it is an operator. You see, it is a polynomial of z and z bar of degree p. And when I take the limit, I get the trace of gamma zero p times b tilde, which is a bounded operator. And the result is, even for p is equal to 1, the trace of gamma zero 1, it is actually this is a new c, which is smaller than strictly smaller than the limit of this. So if I take the identity for b tilde, okay, you get that this is strictly smaller. Actually, this is due to the fact that you get only the condensate phase when you take the mean field limit with these observables. And if you take a limit where epsilon is related to H, so you couple the H with the epsilon going to zero, then it is known that there are two phases, a condensate phase and a classical Gibbs gas. And the question, is there a mathematical translation of this? Are there mathematical objects catching those two scales? And I will be able to present this, to give you detail, to give you explanation about this.
So, Francis, can you explain why you put the Planck constant in this way in the Hamiltonian?
Yes, H, this is actually with here. So as I said, you could make a unitary transform, just a change of scale, and it's okay. There are various possibilities to write the problem. It's just here. It is just a choice, actually. It's not, you can make a unitary transform and transform the problem to the standard one. And actually it's possible also to write, but it's simpler to write it here with the harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian. It's possible to write it also on a manifold, but then with a semi-classical Laplacian. But then the result is different. And the dimension is not two, it is three. There are very. So I chose this example. And the third example about non-midfield and non-exactly semi-classical problem, it is something that we discussed with Steve, and it was related to some article by physicists and discussion that Steve had with Dutch about this. A simple problem, actually, it is really similar to what we heard last week, but it is in the bosonic setting. It is a model where you consider a boson with some bosons which are spread among K sites and with a nearest neighbor interaction and an internal Hamiltonian also, which is actually quartic. And the scaling is the following. So there is 1 over n. N is the number of the typical number of particles. And the first thing that we do is that we, as before, if k is fixed, we divide by n, and you end up with epsilon square, and it is really a semi-classical problem in finite dimension, actually. So if you want to study the spectral asymptotic of this problem, this is really a semi-classical problem, standard one. But what is the eigenstate terminalization hypothesis? It is this general formula that when you take an observable, and you want to compute the matrix entries in some basis of eigenvectors, you have this formula that it is a function of the average energy plus a correction which involves some random operator, and this is a small factor related to the number of states, and the function here depends only on the average energy and the difference. So that's and so it has been studied numerically and interpreted by physicists as something which makes sense. But mathematically, it's not clear how to give a good meaning of this kind of asymptotics. And actually, it's not only a question, a semi-classical question, because when one looks more carefully of what the physicists say, it is usually often the number of sites is related to the number of particles, and it's more comparable to the number k. Is independent of n, as I said, it's a semi-classical problem, but if it is the number of sites depends on a, for example, if it is proportional to the number n, it's rather a thermodynamic limit, or you can even think of some other scalings or relation between the scales and discuss, and probably that this Bose-Bard model is very interesting to analyze what can say the different techniques and to compare the result according to the asymptotic behavior of n and k of n.
And so for the other models, the ETH has been studied numerically or not?
You mean for
the other examples that you...
It was not the same exactly. The questions were not exactly the same. But actually, this is one case that we discussed specifically with Steve about the question of, and he had apparently very clear ideas of very clear insight of what was going on, but he gave a talk actually last year about this, but. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have finished with the example and I want to proceed. And I will speak of various quantization and various approaches to this problem. So I will, the first natural quantization in quantum field theory, it is weak quantization. Weil quantization and anti-weak, so weil quantization, Nalini has spoken about it and I will be rather rapid, but I will just recall one thing about it. And then I will switch to the probabilistic point of view and I will explain how we can define measures in infinite in the infinite Wigner measures in the infinite dimensional setting and the reduced density matrix problem. Okay. So actually I have already studied mentioned it. When you have we want to weak quantize polynomials in Z and Z bar, and actually you can start with monomials, and a monomial it is simply a function like this, where you take a bounded operator which sends p particles to the set of the sector of p particles to the sector of q particles. And the way you do it, so you can extend it to the Fock space, so with an arbitrary number of particles, you simply tensorize with the identity, so it will send n plus p particles to n plus q particles, and you symmetrize, because you are playing with bosons, you symmetrize here and here, and then there is a normalization factor, which is here. And if you work in L2 of RD, and if your operator has a Schwarz kernel, you can check that actually the weak quantized operators is exactly what I said. It is you replace, when you write this with the Schwarz kernel, you replace Z by A and Z bar by A star. And this gives you an operator which makes sense on regular functions with wave functions with a finite number of particles. Okay, so this is a weak quantization. The Weil quantization and the anti-weak quantization, so this is a formula that Nalini gave. There is another formula which is related with the representation of the Heisenberg group. Actually, it is a Weil translation, and this is why it is called the Weil quantization. The Weil translation is a translation in the phase space. It is a unitary representation of the Heisenberg algebra, and there is a phase factor that you, which, and you have some relation when you compose two such operators. And actually, Weil quantization, if you take the Fourier transform of the symbol, you can write it as a superposition of Weil operators. So there is some it depends how you put where the modulation is, the integration is done with the Fourier transform of the symbol on the phase space. And notice that at every time, you need the Lebesgue measure. Here you need the Lebesgue measure on RD. Here you need the Lebesgue measure on R2D, which is CD is R2D. So you need a Lebesgue measure for the Weil quantization. For the anti-weak quantization, this is a superposition of Korean state. See, it is a positive quantization. You take the symbol. This is a projection operator where what is this is a Korean state. So psi zero is a vacuum, and you translate it with a Weil translation. This gives you a Gaussian state in the phase space, and it's the same for the anti-weak quantization, which is a non-negative quantization. You need the Lebesgue measure on CD. And this is a problem in infinite dimension that there is no Lebesgue measure.
Can you show again the weak one?
Yes. So why? So weak is defined for polynomials. or actually you can do it for analytic function. And anti-Vic, why there is nothing against Giancarlo Vic, it is simply that you change the order of the annihilation and creation operators.
But for Vic, you didn't make this comment about Lebesgue measure?
Because you don't need, this is defined, you see this is defined algebraically for the Vic quantization and it works in infinite dimension. Okay. And there is a connection that it is actually the anti-Vic quantization, it is the Weyl quantization of the symbol with a convolution with a Gaussian function. So all of this is well known in a finite dimension, but notice that at all the places we have a Lebesgue measure. Okay. And this is so one way to solve this problem is to replace Lebesgue measure by Gaussian measures, because and this is the path which was followed by our colleagues in Reims. The first thing that you can do is that even in finite dimension, if you multiply a function in L2 by a Gaussian. So this is unitary from so now you replace your translation invariant L2 space into some Gaussian L2 space with a Gaussian measure, and when you make you conjugate the anti-Vic quantization or the Weyl quantization with this unitary transform, you end up with Gaussian measure on the phase space. So, and when you have Gaussian measure, you can use the theory of Wiener spaces to define a Weyl quantization and an anti-Vic quantization for this Gaussian measures. What is the drawback with this approach is that you know that two Gaussian measures are quasi-equivalent if and only if their covariance matrices differ by Hilbert-Schmidt operators, and this is related also to the Schell theorem about the equivalence on the fact that canonical this is about the fact that canonical commutation relations are represented in the same Fock space, and so the result for this is that there is always, with this approach, there is always some Hilbert-Schmidt or trace class condition, and this is what I said about the interaction term for the spin boson problem. There was a trace class condition which was required, which was in this problem. And also the second drawback is that with a general non-linear flow, a Gaussian measure does not remain Gaussian. So all the observables that you have constructed with a specific Gaussian measure, you do not know what they become when you make some evolution. I am very rapid about this. There is another question related to this, which has attracted a lot of attention by the mathematical community. It is when you have a nonlinear evolution problem, you can think of constructing a nonlinear Gibbs measure, which is invariant by this flow. But okay, there are many people who have worked. And there is a survey written by Thoman, Burke, and Svetkov, if you want to have a look at it. I just wanted to mention it for the record. And I now go to the third probabilistic aspect, and it was actually the way that we chose to follow with Zied-Amari then joined by Sébastien Breteau and Marco Falconi, where we at that time we were in Rennes, so this is why I speak of the Rennes group. And there were some also some other younger people, and I do not mention everybody. It starts with the following simple idea that in finite dimension we can define Wigner measures simply by duality. If you consider a family of states, so the trace class operator, non-negative trace class with a trace equal to 1, with the additional, I need some additional uniform conditions, so maybe I have not insisted on the fact that the number operator actually, here it is. The number operator, this is z square vic epsilon, and if you want, so okay. So this is what I say, more or less, here is that asymptotically in the phase space there is no mass going to infinity. Everything occurs in some bounded domain in the phase space. Okay, this forbids the mass to go to the infinity at the in the phase space, because I have a weight, a quantum weight, which is related to the distance to zero in the phase space. And when you have this, what are the Wigner measures? They are probability measures. They are characterized after a subsequent extraction. Actually, it is like for the asymptotic of when one studies the asymptotic of eigenvectors. You need some subsequent extraction. And it is characterized by, you can characterize a measure by its characteristic function. And the characteristic function is simply given. Sorry, there is a limit. It should be, it is not equal. It is a limit as epsilon k goes to zero. It should be replaced by of trace sorry I forgot this
and what you call Wigner measure is the W or is after passing to the limit
I take the limit yes because the symbol of it was, if I take I take the Weyl quantization, the epsilon Weyl quantization, this is exactly W epsilon. This is a Weyl operator. When you Weyl quantize the exponential of a linear expression, you get a Weyl operator. Okay.
So what you call the Wigner measure is mu. It's the
it
limit.
It is mu. Yes. Ah, yes. Sorry. So the Wigner measure it is mu. Yes, I said that. Okay. Maybe it's better written. Here, if I now take any Weyl quantized operator, it's better written here. What I get is that the B Weyl operator, and I take it against the rho epsilon, I take the limit as k it goes to infinity. This is the integral of B, the symbol, times the measure. Yeah, there was, sorry for the mistake, there was and it was not clear. So if after some sequence extraction, I can have this property for any symbol B, then I say that it, mu is a semi-classical measure, and the subsequent extraction is done for, it is the same for all symbols B. And this is well known in finite dimension, so this is a way to encode asymptotically the information in the phase space of a state. And the same definition works in infinite dimension. Actually, we follow the probabilistic point of view, which says that a probability measure is given by all its marginals. So we take all the collection of finite dimensional space, and you have the orthogonal, so this is my Hilbert space. This is finite dimensional, and I simply consider observables which are cylindrical. I take a function which is given by this, and I take the identity in all this direction. Okay, so this is simply the separation of variable that when I, the bosonic Fock space made on some direct sum, it is a product of the bosonic Fock space. And I take F, which is finite dimensional, and the while operator, when F is in this space, the while operator is simply the tensor product with the identity. Then we have, due to this estimate, we have some continuity property, which is important when you think of characteristic functions. And also an important thing is that this estimate, that which is for the full number operator, gives you estimates for all the number operator in finite dimensions. When you have this, you can make you do some additional diagonal extraction to have it for any finite dimensional space, and this gives you this allows to give you the yes, here it is written properly. So I say that I have, this is a way to, this is a set of Wigner measures. I say that mu is a Wigner measure associated to this state if the limit of trace of W epsilon square root of 2 pi zeta is equal to this.
And so H, the Hilbert space H, is the full space here?
Yes, now it is a full space. And so this is something which is, you're right, you define all the marginals. The question is this collection of marginal associated to a probability measure on the full Hilbert space? And this is this works because of the so-called Prokhorov criterion, which tells you that you have this estimate. Actually, from this estimate of the number, I say that for all the marginals, I have a uniform estimate with this weight. And this tells you that for all the marginals, the measure of if you take the measure of a bounded of a cylinder which is made of with a ball of large radius goes to zero, actually goes to one uniformly with respect to the dimension. And when you have this, you know that you have a Borel probability measure on H. By the way, it is, for example, this property is not true for a Gaussian measure of which a covariance is given by the norm, or the square of the norm, because we know that the measure of the full space, H, is zero. If you take a Gaussian measure which is given by the square of the norm, actually this measure is carried by a bigger space, and this is why you have to introduce Wiener spaces and so on. Okay, so this This tells you that by superposition of while operators for any cylindrical functions, which depend on a finite number of coordinates, you have this property. So this is, then you can you have a property for the polynomials. You can, as I said, in finite dimension, you can compare polynomials, V-quantized polynomials, and V-quantized polynomials. If you do the same for cylindrical observables, so this means that you have function depending only on the variable in FD, you can do the same. And this allows to, so first of all, due to this positive property, you can define the reduced density matrix for any epsilon, and then you can ask the question, what happens when epsilon goes to zero? I will switch very rapidly about this. Because actually this is a problem which occurs. So in finite dimension, if you control, you have a control of, you can compare, as I said, the Vic and the Weyl quantization in finite dimension. So if the assumption for the state is satisfied for any delta, for delta larger than 2p, so delta it was the power in the 1 plus n epsilon to the power delta over 2, then you can, in finite dimension, you have this kind of result. And in infinite countable dimension, when you have a polynomial which depends on the finite number of variables, this means that the operator b tilde is a finite rank operator. And actually, you can show that you can extend the result that you have this convergence for any compact operator without any additional assumption. The problem is that it is not true if you take a bounded operator. So, and there is a very simple example. It is a case when where you, you this is the following case. When you take the vacuum, so rho epsilon, it is a vacuum state. Actually, this gives you mu, which is delta zero. You can, but if you translate it. So this is a Gaussian state, which is centered at zero in the phase space. If you translate it with this will give you delta at F. And the idea in infinite dimension is that you make a translation which depends on the dimension. Let's say that at step n, I'm in the direction, here I take. And actually epsilon n is 1 over n. And what happens is that if you fix any finite dimensional space for n large enough, the delta will be orthogonal to the fixed dimensional finite dimensional space, and the projection will be at zero. So you, with this, you realize that the Wigner measure is delta at zero, but nevertheless, when you compute exactly the trace of rho epsilon n epsilon, it is equal to one. So you really have a loss of mass, and this is exactly what happened in the, this is exactly what happened in the Bose-Einstein condensate. And there is a way to solve it. It is one way to solve it. I said that trace of gamma epsilon p b tilde was given by trace of rho epsilon b vic epsilon. A way to solve this problem is to introduce a b tilde, which is actually, even if it is for p is equal to 1, you take, so this means that you consider the one particle space, b tilde, you can think of adding a parameter, and you can even consider, let me remember, I think I took this one. So this is a second micro-localization. Micro-localization. Of the one particle, this acts, let's say, so this is a one particle space. You second quantize this observable, and in the end, you get, you can define a semi-classical measure at the classical scale and a quantum state at the quantum scale. I'll simply show a picture. So, Clotilde, I think that you see what I am speaking about. Okay, this is about the second microlocalization. And I consider the phase space. I have a sphere at infinity, a sphere at zero, and the idea is to make a matching of a quantum scale with a classical scale. So at the classical level, I have a distribution, a classical distribution, with actually a delta at the point zero in the phase space. And when I make some blow up, I get actually this delta with the mass, which is mu c, is actually related to a quantum state. So this is so just to tell you that this problem of defect of compactness is actually related to some real phenomena in physics. I rapidly finish. I think I have 5 minutes to. Okay. So this was the initial question of Steve about the possibility of the Egorov theorem in infinite dimension. And I will show you that there is also a very simple problem. I told you that the classes of operators are associated in the Fock space. With the Fock space, they rely on some rigid linear structure. We saw the cylindrical symbol that you can wild quantize. And you can you can wild quantize them or weak quantize them or anti-weak quantize them. And essentially, all these quantizations are equivalent because we are in finite dimension when you consider cylindrical observables. You can take weak quantized polynomials. And you can also take pseudo-differential classes defined by some Gaussian measure, with the integration with respect to some Gaussian measure. And even before considering a quantization of these symbols, you realize that those classes of symbols are not left invariant by a nonlinear transformation. So even at the level of symbols, all the symbols which are considered in quantum field theory, you cannot deform them and by some nonlinear transformation, and to be sure that the symbol remains, the symbol does not remain in the class that you have defined. So if However, it is possible to prove the propagation of Wigner measures. So I told you that the Wigner measures are the asymptotic dual of the quantization process. So in the quantization, you start with a symbol and you have an operator. And the Wigner measures, you start with state, and asymptotically you have a measure on the phase space, which is a classical object. And this is an example that we studied with Zied Amari, which is the R3 model with a Coulombic interaction in dimension 3. And under this assumption at time zero, that you have some control of the initial state at time zero, then you can prove that, and if you have a single Wigner measure at time zero, you can prove that the evolution of the state as a single measure, which is given by the push forward of the initial measure by the R3 flow. The R3 flow is the non-linear partial differential equation that I can write. It is simply given by you solve this equation. This is okay. C square, and there is a lambda z. And so the condition PI, I have not explained, it is a simple condition to check that you can, instead of that this solves the problem of the defect of compactness for the reduced density matrices. And how do we do this? You first check that by some Ascoli type argument that you can make the sequence extraction so that for all time you have a single Wigner measures, a single Wigner measure. Then you prove using a cylindrical while quantized observable that you have that this measure solves in a weak sense some transport equation where you have the Poisson bracket here. And then this is where we use again a probabilistic point of view. It is that we have to give up the deterministic point of view of solution to differential equation, because we work with a weak solution of transport equation with cylindrical functions. This means that we actually want to consider the projections, the marginals of this. So we have a probability measure depending on time, which evolves. And we consider actually only the marginals, the evolution of the marginals. So this means that we have a velocity field and we project the velocity field on finite dimensional spaces. But by doing this, you lose Lipschitz continuity or any, you cannot use anymore any fixed point theorem to define the solution of a differential equation. And you have to use some probabilistic point of view in terms of generalized flow. So I recall you that generalized flow were introduced first, I think, by Dipernay and Lyons, and then they have been developed a lot in measure transportation techniques. Measure transportation theory, actually, we used a very nice book of Ambrosio, Gigli, and Sabaré for this, and I finish with a picture. So this is the picture that you can think of. So we have for every time a probability measure in the phase space, we have this decomposition, the finite dimensional phase space, and it's orthogonal. And when you have probability measure in a big space with a projection. You can think of using the disintegration of the measure, which is a probability measure version of Fubini theorem, if you want. And this means that for any y in the finite dimensional space, on the fiber here, which is you have a measure mu t of y, a probability measure mu t of y, and here I have plotted for various points above y the velocity field it is a Hamiltonian vector field that we use for solving the differential equation. And the first thing that you can do is to compute the average velocity field along the fiber. And then when you have this average velocity field, you take the same velocity field on all the fiber. And this new velocity field that we have constructed, of course, preserves the cylindrical nature of the function. When you do this, you get only, if you have good LP estimate for the LP estimate of the total, the initial velocity field for the total measure, you can prove that you have good LP estimate. And for all this new velocity field, cylindrical velocity field, and you take the limit as d goes to infinity, let's say, and you have a stability result. But on every finite dimensional space, we use a generalized flow to give a meaning to the evolution of probability measures. And I finish here. Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.